Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's going on? The Whole Truth podcast has a bit of a different setup this week. Last weekend, we had our first ever Music for Mental Health concert at the Roundhouse in London, which was amazing. Can't really believe how well it went, how engaged the audience were, how open the artists were. It was quite something. On the way there, I spoke to Dr. Alex. We were driving to the Roundhouse in Isaya and we decided to talk about mental health. Dr. Alex is someone who I rate because he is an influencer, someone who jumped on a television show with 500 followers and left with 1.4 million. And he actually intends to really utilise his influence for positivity, which is wicked, because I think that's how you should do it. So this is my conversation with Alex, and I hope you enjoy it.
Right.
Make yourself comfortable.
I will, mate. I will.
Mate, thanks for having me on the Whole Truth podcast. I'm really excited.
Listen, I'm glad you're here. We're in a say out on the way to Music for Mental Health,
yeah.
which
I'm really excited for.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be brilliant, isn't it?
It is, and I think it was one of these bizarre moments for me when I was trying to get together like the lineup and people involved. And I think the thing about mental health that I want to get battle, like, well, want to deconstruct in a way, is the idea that even discussing it is exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's a negative thing at all. To just open the discussion is really positive. And so a lot of my friends wanted to jump on board, and that's why someone like yourself to jump on board as well has been...
Because you obviously were quite open, forthcoming, talking about your own mental health.
Yeah. But I just wanted to be like a proper conversation. I just wanted to be like seamless.
Yeah. You can always talk about it without having, you know, judgment about it and things like that.
You are definitely in a position of influence, and you are choosing, from a conversation we had before this, to use that space to encourage others to be more considerate. I mean, so being a doctor, you have some experience of working with people.
Yeah, I think for me, coming off Love Island, I kind of had a bit of a, you know, what do I do with my life now? I didn't expect, when I went on Love Island, in all honesty, to come off, you know, with the kind of platform that I have, for many reasons. And I had a kind of choice to make of where I'm going to go with this. And for me, I was like, look, I'm a doctor first and foremost. That's what I've always trained to do. So let's use that for something like that I feel is beneficial. And that's why I'm trying to like raise awareness around things that affect particularly young people. And I think mental health is probably up there with the issue that's most really important to young people at the moment, you know?
Well, I think one of the greatest challenges young people face is social media and the kind of like really hyper things like hyper fast reality. You know, you're coming from reality television, which is like there's a whole load of it where and it's so addictive.
Yeah,
and it's so like you get this. It's just you're watching other people exist, and it's. I think sometimes it can even distract you from. Mm. Do you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
for you to be in that space where you're providing a relief for people, yeah. but then to actually come out and be like,
I mean, you know, being on that reality kind of show, it's not even good for your mental health, to be honest. Like, yeah. you know, it's amazing. The highs are so high on that kind of show, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is something like that I'm so lucky to experience. But then there's bits of it like where you go, oh my gosh, the whole world's watching me, and you know, I've messed up, or I said something maybe I shouldn't have said, or and you yeah, feel yeah, so yeah. much pressure from it. So you're coming off it, you know, you are hyper aware of that. And also, like, you know, people, I mean, you've had it for many years, like people know, like knowing you and knowing who you are. But for me, I went from Alex, a doctor in A&E with 500 followers on Instagram to now nearly 1.4 million and
yeah,
people
500.
Knowing you. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a lot of pressure there.
And it was, I got the same crap post. I'm still doing the same, you know, rubbish post that I was doing back then now.
So but loads of people want to see it.
But loads of people
I think that's
it.
Quite cool, though.
I mean, I've seen from A&E kind of the sharp end of mental health, I think. And sometimes when people have a position of almost desperation with things. And I think it's so important that we kind of encourage people to have that conversation a lot earlier. Because some people, in it, you know, have come to A&E, I've seen who maybe take an overdose or something.
Yeah.
That's the first time they've ever spoken about mental health or how they feel. They've not told anyone how they felt until they got to the point where they've done something quite extreme.
Yeah, I know. So. What was it like between men and women in that regard as well?
I think, you know... Yeah,
just
and
practically
I think this is,
from your experience.
I think from my experience, and also I think it's quite widely talked about, that men really are quite rubbish at coming out and saying, oh, I'm not feeling too good at the moment, because, you know, society has a lot of pressures on, I think, men to be tough, and you shouldn't ever, you know, feel weak at all. I think women are a little bit more ahead of us in that way, and they go, actually, I'm not feeling as well, and talk about the issues a little bit earlier. And I think that's why we see, you know, suicide, and this is an awful way of saying it, but, you know, people actually successfully taking their life is much more common in men.
Yeah.
You know, which is, it's a really sad thing.
Yeah, but you know, similarly, they're, of course, the big hook, though, is mental health doesn't discriminate, but in terms of opening the conversation, not mental health issues affect everyone, and I don't think there's really a gender divide there, but the way in which we handle them, potentially. You, though, this is a great segue into me genuinely asking... Mm. How are you? Like, really?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it depends. It depends on which day, I think. Some days, I think for me, I get quite a lot of anxiety now around being in, say, a really busy public place or going to an environment where I don't, like, know how many people are going to be there and what's going to be like, because I don't know what the, reaction is going to be. You know, people generally, 95% of people are really lovely, but... mentally you can't you could almost tell yourself don't be silly, but
so
you do worry,
paranoia
I think it's a little bit of anxiety around it, and it's not too bad. I mean, it's fine. I just go, Alex is fine, and you just get on with it.
So this is you adjusting to a new life.
I'm trying to learn, you know, learn this, because no one knew how I was walking down the street before, but now people go, Alex, and you go, oh, like, it's just something that's really unusual to get used to. You know, it is an amazing journey, and I'm really enjoying being involved in things like this, quite frankly, that really give purpose, because I think you need that when you're thrust into this environment, you know.
Sure.
Otherwise, you kind of get lost.
Definitely. But okay, so do you feel as though you have the right support system around you to be able to handle this new kind of...
Do you know what? I've got such a good group of friends. My family are incredibly supportive, so they keep me grounded. And they also are there, you know, to support you when you're like, oh gosh, I'm not feeling good about this, so I'm worried about that. And I think that's really important, because you could easily, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, in this world, you kind of get cast into like the celebrity world, and you can get sucked into the whole thing too much and almost believe the hype too much as well,
I think.
And there's a risk when you do that you kind of end up, just kind of getting lost amongst it all, rather than remembering who you are and where you came from and all that.
Very easy to do.
And that's partly why I'm going back to A&E, because, you know, I love the job. I love what I do, and it's a really good grounding. Of course, I'm going to continue. I want to work within TV, you know, the podcast, radio, to encourage and talk about health issues. But I think it's really important for me that I just go back and continue what I'm doing in A&E.
I would consider you to be a hero in your profession. I think the real heroes in our society often don't get enough accolade, and that being doctors, therapists, counsellors, teachers, labourers. Mm. There are loads of people who are working.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? To provide stability for our society, and don't get enough credit.
I agree. And, I think, you know, this is not me. I'm not talking about myself here. I'm just saying, but, you know, in the NHS at the moment, you have a lot of people working at 200% effort, you know,
getting paid
100% of the time. And I think, you know... they're not always getting the, you know...
Not at all.
...thanks that they should be. And I think that's from, you know, all angles in terms of the government. The people, the public love the NHS. They love the public services and things like that. But, you know, I do think they're a little bit neglected at the moment and need a bit of, bit of a boost. And within mental health, I mean, you know, one in three doctors within the hospital have, I believe, to have mental health condition, depression, anxiety, etc. But how many of them have sought help or are having help or tackling their issues?
Have the time, do they?
Because it's time and also it's stigma as well within the hospital. I remember myself when I was at medical school, I was having a time where I was in Truro, West Country way, and I felt a bit isolated, and actually I felt quite down.
Right.
And I was too afraid to say to anyone because I thought, if I say to the medical school, actually, I'm struggling at the moment, they might not let me qualify as a doctor.
Whoa.
And I truly, genuinely believed that. And I never said anything, I never said a word, and I dealt with it with my family and my friends, and I was lucky that through their intervention, actually, I managed to turn things around early enough that I was okay, I was fine. And, you know, I've got, I think, quite good mental health now, good strategies for coping if I'm ever down. But the scary thing is that I did genuinely believe they wouldn't let me graduate.
Yeah, that's
and that's
really
frightening,
scary.
Isn't it? And that I think that I'm not alone with that. There's a lot of doctors even now, and you know, medical students, nursing students, and in other, I'm sure in other professions and other workplaces that won't speak out because.
Would you say that? Would you say that's probably the worst period of mental health you've been through?
Yeah, I'd say so. I was struggling back then. I think a little bit. It was starting to affect my work in school. Then it feels like school in medical school, and I think that for me was a time I was like, you know, woof, I'm actually not doing too well here.
But what was it you were feeling?
I just felt very low. I just felt very like, just couldn't bother with work. I didn't want to go into uni. I just didn't really want to do anything with my mates. I was staying, I wouldn't do anything. Wasn't training, going to the gym and things.
Right.
And I was lucky that, as I say, my friends, my family, like, recognised it and I spoke with them and that I actually, I really managed to make a change. And that way I engaged with CBT, so like online counselling stuff, and I really pushed to encourage doing like hobbies and activities that kind of made me feel, you know, better again, and I kind of fought my own demons, if you like.
Yeah.
But it's not always, that's not always enough for people. Sometimes you do need a bit of extra support, and if you're too afraid to ask for it, that's a terrible place to be, isn't it?
What do you remember as being especially comforting during that time?
Do you know what? I never ever spoke out to anyone within the university or anything because of my fear. And I think that what I found most comforting really was my friends and family. My mum used to ring me every night and speak to me for like 40 minutes to an hour every night when I told her that I wasn't feeling good. And we did that until the day I was like, do you know what? I'm feeling good again.
Really?
And we did it every day. And we spoke about, we went through all the things I was thinking and worried about, and we rationalised them every day, even if we had the same conversation, and then months and months later.
Just made them more bite-sized.
Yeah,
like
to try and break it down. It was almost like a way of counting. My mum basically did counselling with me, and I think that got me back to...
So it wasn't so overwhelming.
Yeah. It got me back to...
Mate, that's wonderful.
And now I think it's made me so much stronger because I make sure I have coping mechanisms if I ever feel down. I make sure that I maintain my mental health by keeping exercising,
make sure
I talk about issues as soon as they come up. I try and practice wellness and mindfulness, you know? So.
Yeah. I mean, when did you kind of realise you wanted to go to medical school?
Do you know, I was about 12 or 13. I pretty much realised at a young age. I watched, like, City Hospital, and then later on it was, like, 24 Hours in A&E when I went to medical school. But, you know, those kind of programmes really inspired me because it's like, you get such an incredible opportunity to use science to help people.
To help
people? That, to me, was, like, so exciting. And, yeah, it just is a fantastic career. There's a lot of challenges with the NHS, I think. The pressure on the A&E services, GP services, and when the hospitals, on, you know, midwives, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, everyone is so big at the moment, and
that's
we
massive.
Do have to tackle it. We have to tackle it, because I think NHS is in trouble.
What would you think? So that desire to help people, I think, is a true gift, and it's so great that you made that decision and followed up on it. Do you think at that point that you were conscious of mental health? I suppose that's more tangible, isn't it, to know that you can help people who might cut themselves?
Yeah, do you know what? In all honesty, I always used to think of me, like in the way helping people as in, like, with car accidents, all that.
Yeah.
To be honest, mental health didn't think about it as much.
Really?
It's only since I've graduated and I've done my done my 2 years of rotations in the hospital as a doctor, and then gone on to be with an A&E permanently, that I've gone, oh my gosh, it's such an issue. Like, well, at least I think at least 1 every 3 or 4 patients I see, regardless of what issue they've come in with, also have some mental health issue as well. And they don't, you know, because I always ask people, and how, what do you do for work, and how are things in life? And it's amazing how many people go, well, actually, I'm struggling at the moment.
Yeah.
But they came in because they cut their finger.
Well, this is the thing, that's the stigma you want to break down, is I think literally everybody is motivated by the desire to balance themselves.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Mm. And a lot of the reason why you end up in A&E is probably because of, you know, people make mistakes when they're tired, when they're overworked, when they're exhausted, when they're feeling a bit, you know? And so I think that, would you say that now, from your newfound knowledge, that there's a real link between...
Yeah, absolutely. Like, physical and mental health is so interconnected. And, you know, if you're... One, you can't really have one without the other.
Yeah.
If you have a physical illness which isn't allowing you to live life in the way you want to live it, it'll affect your mental health.
Yeah.
And eventually you'll have a mental health issue.
Yeah.
If your mental health is poor, then eventually you, through lack of diet, lack of exercise, lack of activity,
isn't it?
You're not going to live physically. You're not going to be well.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, really, you know, when you realised that you had a problem, how long did it take you to speak out? Did you feel that there was a stigma around speaking out?
Well, I don't know. With me, my struggle has always been to not talk.
Okay.
I'm very impulsive.
Yeah.
So often I've said things without thinking, and I think what I would be guilty of would be rationalizing in quite a positive context, in that you made things more palatable for yourself and break them down, but I think actually in a negative way I would suppress a lot of my feelings by rationalizing them, like making them logical. So for example, it took me a while to grieve the death of my grandparents, my grandmothers, because
it's hard when you lose your family, isn't it?
No, it's massively. But it's like almost like at the time I rationalised my way out of it.
Yeah.
And when I was struggling with depression and anxiety I could actually work off.
Mm.
So I'd be like, I'd get this feeling of like intense discomfort and be like, oh well, I'm gonna go and make some music or write, you know.
Okay.
And it was like a petrol. But actually, long term, it wasn't great because I would be.
It burns you out, doesn't it? Actually.
So I was always kind of saying something was wrong, but I wasn't necessarily doing anything about it. And actually, it's only from doing therapy and from calming down a lot and from, you know, a long stretch of sobriety and stuff like that, that I've managed to really... And, you know, my therapist said it to me in the most beautiful way, literally this week. She said, you know, a state of happiness, which isn't what everyone thinks it is, but is when you...
Peace is what we were talking about.
Yeah, is when you are... emotionally aware. That's
absolutely.
It.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Now I have to say, same with you, is like I struggled. Mate, this morning I had a bit of an anxiety thing, but I felt rest knowing that I know how to deal with it.
It is true, isn't it? And I think a lot of, I'm quite big into mindfulness, and I think a lot of people kind of disregard that, like in that kind of thing, oh, it's a self-help kind of thing. But being aware that your mind and your thoughts aren't truth.
Yeah.
Because we always sometimes go, you have a thought in your mind going, oh, that person look at me, he probably doesn't like me. But why do we listen to this nonsense, like, we all have this second voice that we listen to, isn't it? We almost listen to that too much. And I think being aware of your emotions and aware of your thoughts, and that your thoughts aren't always right, I think it's just so powerful. And when you get to that point, you're able to go, actually, what I'm thinking is rubbish.
Yeah. No, totally. So, well, yeah, you have to understand that your thoughts come from a level of unconscious.
How about you? How are you doing? How are you at the moment? Because you asked me, I need to ask you, isn't it? That's just polite.
Yeah, I'm okay. I've spent this year probably being the least creative I've been in a while, but learning the most about myself.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Because I think a lot of my urgency in life has come from a place of like needing to escape myself, if that makes sense. I'm a very destructive person, but I'm learning to not do that because ultimately I end up harming myself.
It's interesting how you kind of almost said earlier on that your mental health, or in fact instability of mental health, actually feeded or
made into creativity. Yeah, well, you know,
it's very common, like within artists, within even the great scientists and stuff, were some of the biggest or had some of the most mental health issues, which is quite interesting, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think that because I feel like your mind is almost like a way of escaping how you feel, because to the same extent as there is a relationship, I think some people believe you can control your emotional world with your mind, and I don't think you can.
Do you think that creativity is almost like a way of you expressing your inner turmoil?
Yeah, I mean, totally. Well, I'd say more so with young creatives, you know, because like if you excel at something when you're young, you're usually escaping something, I think. If you're like particularly, you know, that's why you end up with a lot of these tragic cases when people have been exposed to a spotlight or fame at a young age, and they're enabled, and they can't deal with it. And I've experienced that difficulty myself because I needed to know myself. You've literally just said it yourself. Like, you were in a good place before Love Island.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't even know what a good place was before I got famous. I was trying to figure myself out. So since 24, and I'm 26 now, that's just been me trying to figure out how to grow up, really.
It takes time, and we're all learning and stuff. But I mean, obviously, creativity doesn't always require to have, like, you know, mental turmoil. But certainly, you do see it quite commonly. And it's interesting because people either, and also when people are completely at peace with themselves, is when they have like massive epiphanies and things like that, isn't it? You know, like when Newton sat there with the apple hit him on the head, wasn't it? It was that the whole idea was that he was there in a place of complete peace.
Yeah,
it was realization, wasn't it?
So. Yeah. I don't think we give enough credit to the guy who planted the tree.
That's true, because if you hadn't put the tree in that place, the apple wouldn't have fallen off and hit him on the bloody head.
Yeah. I'd love to source that back to like a defining moment. Like, imagine if Isaac Newton hadn't gone to sit by that particular tree. Or imagine if he'd gone to sit by another tree.
I think about in life, it's funny how things happen in that way. Like, for the Love Island thing, for example, like, when you track about how they found me, they actually, one of the casting people swiped me on Bumble and saw me, looked my Instagram handle up, went on Instagram, messaged me. If I hadn't seen that message, or if I'd have just not responded, we wouldn't be sat here right now.
Really?
Bumble, in fact, I didn't reply for 6 weeks. As soon as she messaged again and going, look, Alex, I'm from ITV, let me give you a call. And I was like,
that's changed your life.
Do you know what? I was like, oh, go on, another word. And then from there, I spoke to her, and I was like, I'm still like, oh, I'm not sure I'm going to go with this interview. And my consultant was like, why not? Why not do something different? Like, how can you say no? It's an experience. And I was like, do you know what? Go on then, I'll go. And then it just tumbled, and I'm sat here now going around in a Seat chatting about mental health. So it worked out all right.
That's powerful. Of course, we're on our way to Music for Mental Health. We realised this is our third year of I Am Whole. The first 2 years, even though our kind of agendas were more centred around specific age groups and terminology, music was always at the heart of it.
Yeah.
And music and mental health, I think, are totally intertwined. So, what would you say, like, good or bad, or positive or negative, are there any songs, artists, albums that define periods of your life that you can't, you love listening to if you want to feel happy, can't listen ever to again because it reminds you of?
Yeah. I think as I was growing up, I always found I used to listen to Nirvana as I was going through like,
really?
That stage of
your grunge phase.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you have red hair?
Yeah, I didn't. I was just wearing dark clothes. I was, like, my hair used to be a lot darker.
What about a studded?
I used to have a wrist, yeah, same. Band and all that, and I same. Was a bit like, always wore like really black clothes.
Damn
and
right.
I was kind of like, yeah, yeah, Nirvana, like that's absolutely sick, Kurt Cobain and all that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that was probably like the like teenage turbulence kind of years. I think people would be surprised that I had any
teenage
kind of turbulence. But like
love
teenage
that.
Turbulence, yeah.
Did you coin that phrase?
No, I haven't. Teenage turbulent human ninja turtles.
Teenage turbulence human ninja turtles.
That's it. That's what it is. You hit it first.
I want to spend more time with you.
So you know what? I think I always kind of used music as like a good escape. I enjoyed like, I loved like the Red Hot Chili Peppers as I was like going through like uni and stuff as well. I had a big phase with that. And I just like all music. I think music is just great for escapism in general, whether it's
so if you had
classical.
To, but if you had to think on one song, if you were like, if, and you were like, right, you need to change your mood right now. You want to be in a more peaceful place and you had to just, off the top of your head, what would you go to?
Oh, what would I? I actually don't know.
Off the top of your head,
I'd probably go Californication.
There you are,
bang. Chili's probably it.
Yeah,
if you like, do you know what? I want to just put it on, drive the car.
Californication.
And actually, do you know what? I drove through California and I put that song on, and it was like one of the best days
best moments ever.
Of life.
All right. So if someone said to you, "You're gonna get like, what is the your idea of you never want to be trapped with this song ever again because it holds too much emotional value for you? What would it be?
What one?
Like a past breakup.
I don't think there is a song, do you know?
Really?
I don't attach that kind
you
of...
You never had a thing with a relationship where it's like, oh, this is our song. And then you're like, now I can no longer listen to this song.
No.
Oh, well,
and honestly,
great.
No. I'd be making it up.
You sure it's not Dizzy Rascal Bunkers?
Actually, no, that was a great summer song. Actually, do you know what? There's a few summer songs, Bonkers, and also One Dance, Drake's One Dance. That was a come on. That was a couple of years ago. No, it was only like 2 years
that's
ago.
A great
that
tune.
Was an absolute. Was last year, wasn't it?
Was it
that
too? Was it too? Was it remind you too much of?
No, actually, do you know what? It reminds me of just like having fun on Clapham Common.
Oh, great!
Having a couple of beers in the sun and all that.
Well, that sounds.
I love
perfect.
That.
Right, so music
that.
Is just a general. It just generally
you
aids
is,
your mental health.
What do you think? Why do you think people find music so empowering around? It, mental health, yes,
because
but like, it's all
everyone
sorts
understands
of
it.
It's all movements.
Because it's it unifies people. Like, think how bizarre. I mean, obviously, performance in general has this quality because you have it with theatre or cinema, but more so with the and I suppose to an extent football, but or sports. Keep extending it. But the idea, I remember watching this amazing documentary about this stage designer, and it's the idea that. At one point in a major gig, there are thousands of people who kind of don't know each other in total silence.
Yeah.
In darkness.
Yeah.
Like just
yeah,
before.
That isn't usual.
Just
yeah.
before. Just before the lights come on, they're in darkness. And like no one knows it. And they're all about to go, yay!
Yeah, it is.
And
yeah.
that is something so powerful.
I think that's why, like,
music.
When I went to like Glastonbury for the first time, I realised that it's such a, it's one of the great levelers, actually.
Yeah.
Because no one cares about the time anymore. No one looks up. Most people wouldn't necessarily look at when a certain artist on. You kind of float around and enjoy it.
I'd say Glastonbury is generally disorientating.
Yeah, it's just it is disorientating. I spent my whole time lost, quite frankly. I only found the exit on the last day, which was handy.
Perfect.
But it is like that. I think people, doesn't matter what background you're from, everyone's just like enjoys this like music and just that space. And I think that's why when people get such bad Glastonbury blues and you leave and over the weeks and months afterwards,
it's
everyone's
ultimate
like,
freedom. That's also responsibility though, isn't it? Because like you're just in like, all you have to be responsible about is like when
eating,
you've zipped
and
your
a drink.
Tent up.
Yeah, exactly. Zipping your tent and even then you don't bother.
Yeah, don't bother.
You don't bother. You're like, do you know what? If you want to go in there, be my guest. Yeah.
We've got another initiative. I've got a couple more questions for you. If you had an hour free in a day, we do a thing called Whole Hour where we promote an hour to look after yourself. What would you do?
Whole hour. So I would go to the gym because I find I would do at least, I do 40 minutes that hour in the gym because I think that is a great way, you know, to release stress.
Yeah.
It's good for your body and for your mind.
Yeah.
I think it really gets the endorphins flowing.
Yeah.
Helps boost your serotonin and stuff.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
From a doctor. You said that as a doctor.
I can't advocate exercise enough, I think, for mental health. Whatever it doesn't have to be the classic go to the gym. I think whatever you enjoy, if you like, I don't know, I personally like tennis or stuff like that.
Roly-polies.
Roly-polies, if you like going for a walk.
Cartwheels.
It can be anything you want to do. Yeah, cartwheels, whatever you want to do. Ping pong, whatever. Like anything, table tennis, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, something that you enjoy that's going to, you know, keep you fit and exercise as well. Yeah. The other 20 minutes I'd probably spend doing a bit of mindfulness. So just having downtime, no screens, no... like iPhone and TV, you know, watch it all and just sit there and just relax, maybe listen to a bit of music and just allow your brain to like decompress.
Totally.
That's probably what I would do. I think the combination of those two, I think, is a good way to keep mentally fit.
All right, and if you had some suggestions on how someone watching this, listening to this, if they're having a bit of a tough time, what would you give as a bit of advice?
I think the most important step that anyone takes or anyone would take is to speak out and just talk about it. The hardest bit, and at least for me as well, as I was trying to be quite proud and I'm a medical student, I'm a doctor, I shouldn't say that I'm struggling at all, was going, oh mate, I'm actually not having a good time at the moment. And then as soon as I did that, I felt this huge weight lifted, and all of a sudden it's the start of the process of getting back to where you want to be. And I think that's the most important thing. So go and speak to friends and family, see your GP, your doctor and stuff, and just talk about it, because that's the only way you're going to get to back to square one. And it's just like physical illness, most things are fixable.
Yeah.
And then if they're not 100% fixable, well,
I think it's like maintainable, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like one... Like there was I read an amazing article in The Guardian about one woman's real battle with mental health issues. And I mean, we've used this analogy before with Hull, and I think it's quite, a lot of people go to it. The kind of analogy of a broken leg, saying that, you know, like the idea that if your leg was broken, you'd go to a hospital.
Yeah.
But, you know, and... You know, her insight was quite interesting, because she felt as though it was nothing like that, because this notion of fixing seems kind of out of the question when you have long-standing mental health issues that are more severe than anxiety or depression, or they're more long-lasting, because, you know, people can have bouts of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually was thinking about it more like a pulled muscle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like, it's all you have to do is, it's the idea of mindfulness and whatever else, is like stretching, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that's what...
And if you don't, you know, follow the right steps to improve that muscle you've damaged, then it gets worse. If you continue to exercise without doing, the correct form of exercise, you make it worse. I'm doing quite a lot of workshops with children around mental health in different schools. And actually, something I use, and I think it's quite an interesting analogy, is I show two pictures. One picture is a cartoon character with a broken leg. He's in a hospital bed. The nurses, you know, this is very stereotyped. No one would expect nurses to do this, obviously, but like holding grapes, and he sat there having a cup of tea, smiling away with his, you know, his cast on. He's very happy. He's got a broken leg, but he's actually quite happy. Then you got another person sat in the chair, crying, all alone. No one's around them, but there's no physical injury. There's nothing that you can see that's wrong. There's nothing that's gone in that scenario, and it's just like that kind of representation of physical health. You can see that something's wrong. Someone usually has symptoms of that. You can see,
of course.
And therefore, people can recognise that and go, it's okay to go to the hospital because you can see there's something wrong.
It's tough.
Or go to see a doctor. But because the other person is sat there crying, they're like, well, what are you crying about? You can't see anything wrong. And that is an interesting one. And it is good that generally the children are brilliant. They recognise that. And I think that is the start of, I think, the improvement that we are making, I think, in society. People are realising that not everything is seen.
Totally.
Which is a big step.
It's great, yeah. Positivity for the future generations. I actually think we're here.
Boom.
We are at the Roundhouse.
That was good.
Oh, I'm excited.
Oh, yeah, we are here. Jeez.
Right. Wait, I was flying.
Like, yeah, I was like, is he right? That's a bus stop.
He's taking me to the bus stop.
Perfect.
Here we go, this man. Awesome.
Mate, I'm so excited. This is going to be a great, great gig. Bam.
Here we go, man.
This is it. Music for mental health.
That was the whole truth, the whole truth. What do you want to know about the whole truth? It's all about the truth and nothing but the truth. I want the truth, the whole truth. Oh, hold on. If you would like to subscribe to our podcast, please click subscribe. And look after yourselves.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Powered by Spirit Studios.